Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 16th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 8th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. For tickets and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guest today is John Burns. John is the founder of John Burns Real Estate Consulting, and he opened that in 2001. John and his team consult with executives all over the country, analyzing and summarizing the information they need to make housing industry decisions with more confidence. The company is on retainer with many of the largest companies in the housing and investment industries, producing regularly monthly reports on housing market conditions and customizing specific studies to help with strategic and community-specific decisions. John, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Bruce.
I've always found it amazing that if I looked at what you did in 2006, I would say that most of your type of businesses would have probably had a hard time surviving to 2009, and you flourished, and I thought that was the coolest thing. So a lot of your growth has sort of happened after the downturn, correct?
No, absolutely. But volatility is a good thing for our business. When it's boring, that's when we struggle a little bit.
Well, you've been okay. Now, when we talk about your team, I mean, that's expanded as well. So you have how many offices now, and how many what's your number of team members, if you will?
We're up to about 65 people in 17 offices. You know, most of them are one or two people, but the local presence really helps us understand what's going on in the market.
I talked with somebody that you had mentioned to me in Florida, and then a few months later, there was a report that basically talked about what my question was, so I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, you always ask good questions, and we try to answer them.
Well, I bought a track of lots in Florida, so that was the impetus for the question. When dealing with charts, have you ever had a chart disprove something that you were sure was true?
Probably. I'd have to think about that one. First of all, it's rare that I'm 100% certain something is true. I'm always wondering what I don't know.
And I think that's a really healthy thing in the chart world because it's always a new twist or a new manipulation. That's part of what we've had to deal with is like, okay, you're looking at a delinquency list that's soaring, let's say in 2007 and 8, and the foreclosures are going down. So you're kind of going, well, those two don't go together. Something's being played with here. So yeah. You do.
I've definitely had charts teach me that what I thought was right was not.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. And I think when you're consulting, I think you're probably... you bounce up against that where you're dealing with somebody that's so sure that their basic premise is true that that's one of the things you almost have to do is start disproving that so they can make a better decision. Because if that's the basis of what you think is going to happen, that's going to be a problem.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I just had a good one recently. I was trying to prove the real separation of the classes here and how we had more people that are becoming very affluent and more people that are becoming very poor, and I couldn't chart it. So, I mean, we all think that's happening, but I haven't been able to find the stats to prove it.
Okay. I'm trying to, as soon as you say that, I'm thinking of how to do that. What's the last aha moment that your team produced? And I assume that's kind of what they're doing. They're always researching something. and I get a big kick out of that one. I think I found one. I mean, I really do. That makes my year whenever I find one.
Yeah. You know, probably, I mean, we have so many. The one that has stuck out to me recently is I had my staff go and look at what causes recessions, and it started to dawn on me that it really is, they all seem to be preceded by a lot of debt. And sure enough, 11 out of the last 12 recessions were preceded by too much debt in one way or another. So that was an eye-opener to me because I hadn't really read that anywhere before, but it made sense. And as you and I know, housing markets, when they crash, are usually preceded by too much lending, right? So I now started going into industry by industry and say, hey, which ones have too much debt? That's where we should be concerned.
Interesting. And usually what happens, too, when you have an easy time, like let's say real estate had 2000 to 2005 or 6, the debt becomes not only larger, it becomes unhealthier and unsafer because the lenders keep on getting paid regularly on debt that they never should have made in the first place.
Yep, that's exactly what happens. Good things happen. The industry looks great. Everyone starts investing more. They start borrowing more to invest some more. And then all of a sudden things slow down. And guess what? You can't repay your debt.
Do you see any inkling that we're going to experience that this cycle?
Yes, but not in real estate.
Okay.
You can see it in all sorts of government debt, state, local, pension liabilities, the U.S. government. Some of those debts clearly, in my view, can't be repaid. Now, I can't predict the timing of when that is all going to blow up, but it's certainly an issue. The oil industry, there are a lot, everyone's focused on the big publicly traded companies down in Houston, but it's the little small startups whose business plans made a lot of sense when it was $120 a barrel and don't make sense at $45. Those are blowing up right now. And student loans is another industry where the debt has just absolutely positively exploded. And I think most of those students will be able to repay their debt, but I think 11%, I read, are already delinquent right now.
Yeah.
How does that end?
Well, and that's a lot. I mean, you're not talking a little bit of money. You're talking about, it's what, over $1 trillion. So you're talking over $120 billion that's delinquent.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You're right.
So that's a lot of money. One of the things that you guys just came out with, I thought was very interesting. The spread between the price of inventory when it's a ways away.
Yeah.
So, and that was significant. And it actually, about a year ago, about 8 months ago, we did a report, and it was one of the things that I looked at is I've got these little homes in Moreno Valley that are, at the downturn, they were being bought at $60,000, $70,000, and they were now worth $240,000. And 25 miles down the road, these are 1,200 square foot built in 1980. Mm-hmm. I could buy a 3,000 square foot home in Hemet and San Jacinto for $220,000.
Yep.
It was just, what the heck? So why do you think that exists?
Well, that's always happened in the past, as you know, is the outlying areas recover last and crash first and hardest. But this one seems to be taking a heck of a lot longer. And one of the things we did a couple years ago is I took one of my top researchers offline and made him our chief demographer. And we studied this whole urban versus suburban versus rural living issues. And going back to your earlier question about charts, I was not a big believer in urban growth as the way it was being touted, as if the whole world was going to go urban. But the more research I've done, the more I've concluded that we are going to be living a more urban lifestyle going forward than in the past. And it's for a couple of things surprised me. Now that I'll say them out loud, they don't. But for decades, we would invest in freeways to get out to the next great city, and over the last couple of decades, we've really stopped doing that. And instead, the money's been invested in redeveloping a lot of urban areas, even in small cities. So a lot of the cities and urban areas around the country are just much nicer places to be and live than they used to be. So I think that's contributed to it. And then we're down to a point where 29% of households have kids in them, which means 71% do not. So you don't need to be in a good school district and some of those other things really for your children. So some shifting demographics have pushed people to go urban too. And I'm saying all this because I still think the majority of growth is going to be suburban, but there's less demand pushing out to Victorville and Hemet and San Jacinto and Pryor areas for some of those reasons.
Is part of it the difficulty in qualifying for a loan?
I don't believe so.
Really?
So, okay. Well, let me caveat that. It is very difficult to get a down payment together. But I've got so many home building clients that'll tell me, hey, if they've got a 640 FICO, which is probably bottom 25% of the country, and can cobble together a 5% down payment and can document their income, we can get them a loan. And it's not from the big four banks, so the Wall Street Journal keeps covering the big four banks that are shedding some of that business because it's a higher risk business, because if that loan blows up and you made a mistake in the documentation, you're going to eat the whole loan. And
right.
They recognize that. But the Loan Depots and the Quicken Loans and all these non-banks are just taking huge market share by making those loans. And they're dotting their I's and they're crossing their T's and they're being very careful. But I think you can get a loan if you can be exactly what I just said. Do you see something different?
Well, that's a good question. We buy and sell houses. We have a very easy time selling a 1980 house that's 240. Uh-huh. And if we are 320 in a superior area, we have a harder time.
Are you still below the FHA limit?
That's a great question. No. Let's see, in Riverside, it's 350.
Riverside,
so
it would be, yeah.
Yeah, it's 350-ish. So, anytime we pass that, that's a problem. Yes. So the bringing that down hurt the builder, I would think, in Riverside County.
Oh, it killed the builder because most of the new homes were right between 500 and 350, which is what the FHA limit came down. And what I just articulated was an FHA loan. So if you're above but the FHA loan is 115% of the median price. So more than half of the homes in the market qualify for FHA. And you can get a high LTV loan above the FHA limit, but you need much better credit record than I just articulated.
Well, you know, one of the questions, you know, we have hedge fund participation. They went from let's buy a bunch of homes to let's lend to a bunch of investors. Do you see any appetite for them saying let's loan to a group of occupant owners that aren't getting serviced and won't likely get serviced, like the guy that owns a business or the person with less down payment than FHA? Do you see any appetite for taking that on?
I don't deal with that on a day-to-day basis, so I can't speak with confidence.
Okay.
I was in New York all last week and met with a couple of my hedge fund clients who were talking about that business, who shared something very surprising with me. So have you been following Lending Club and the whole crowdfunding?
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, you can get a loan now almost sight unseen from somebody. You're a hard money lender. Hard money lending is now gone to the internet. And to me, that's an early precursor to somebody eventually being able to buy a home through a non-bank with Lending Club or someone along those lines someday in the future, or through a hedge fund. And the hedge funds will take a lot of risk. And if you're running a bond fund in a hedge fund environment or a bond fund of any kind right now, how do you get a 7 or 8% yield in anything you're doing? You're going to have to take a lot of risk. So the answer to your question is I can see them headed there, but I can't tell you a bunch that are doing it right now.
One of the things that might be interesting for your staff to look at is actually read a crowdfunding document. Because I was going to be on a panel with somebody, and it was back in Washington, D.C., and I heard of crowdfunding, but I actually read their document. And this particular company, when I read the document, if I was an investor in the trust deed, let's say, What I actually own isn't a trust deed. I'm making an unsecured loan to this company.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And I don't know that very many people do know that. So the crowdfunding
is crazy.
It is.
I mean, people supposedly that are vetted and are having and have good credit are taking out $30,000 loans to remodel their house or pay off their credit cards at a 12% to 15% interest rate. And I'm like, why would somebody with good credit pay that kind of an interest rate? Something's fishy to me.
Well, and I'll say what's also fishy is that the investor in that $30,000 note is supposed to be accredited. And I think you and I deal with enough people with funds that you just think, okay, none of my clients would even think of participating in a partial interest in a note like that. Zero. So I think, the next bad news we have in our world will be the crowdfunding crowd having problems. That would make sense to me at some point. When I look at charts this year, I look at foreclosures at a point that it's not a significant part of the market. I see affordability still strong. I'm talking about California now. Unemployment headed down. All of those charts usually mean we're booming in construction. We're going up in price and we have really strong sales and we're batting 0-for-3. So what do you think is going on in California? Because this has never happened before with this set of charts, at least in my study.
Yeah. I'm pulling up some data here as we talk. So we're having strong job growth, but in most markets in California, we're not back to peak employment levels yet. In some we are. Just looking like Riverside's 3% above prior peak, but...
But you don't have construction jobs. Building single family houses.
Well, so that's where I'm going with this.
Okay.
There's about 5% more people today aged 20 to 64 than there was in 2007. So my rule of thumb is you need to get 5% above prior peak employment to have fully recovered, gotten rid of all your vacancy from your foreclosures and all those other problems. You know, the vacancy data is not very good at the local level, so I use this job growth as a proxy.
Okay.
I've got a pretty interesting chart I've created that ranks the major markets by total employment today as a percentage of prior peak. And the ones at the top of the list are Austin, Houston, Dallas, Denver, Raleigh, Seattle, Orlando. Orlando's a little slower. They're the ones that are off to the races. And at the bottom of the list are Las Vegas and Chicago and Phoenix, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it varies a lot by market. So my long-winded answer to your question, Bruce, is I think we're still recovering. And I think that job growth with low construction is very good. And once we get to 105% of prior peak employment, we're going to see a serious housing shortage.
What's interesting about that is that isn't there a very big spread right now between new and existing prices for homes?
Completely separate issue, but yes, there is.
Okay, well, it's sort of a separate issue. I mean, if I'm building a new home and I have to compete with a 2005-built 3,000-square-foot home that's kind of new, and it's below my replacement cost, I have to consider, I may not sell mine for $500.
Right. No, you're right, and I shouldn't have said it that way because they are related. But I believe it's frothy land prices that have driven new home prices up, rather than other factors.
I would agree. So when is that going to change? It's probably not until you have a downturn, I would think.
Right. The land prices are very sticky on the way down unless you have banks that are owning the land.
Right.
And we don't have a lot of banks that are owning the land right now, so. I think the new home market is asking for a larger than usual premium over the resale market, and they've had to because they've had to overpay essentially for some land. And what's going to solve that is the resale market having some price appreciation so things get back to normal.
Right. Okay. Do you see all this happening in time for a building boom for California at some point?
Well, a building boom is going to require cities that approve buildings.
Okay.
And so I think California is becoming increasingly supply constrained, increasingly NIMBY. So building boom is probably pushing it. I honestly, I think if you told all the builders, you know, if you double production this year, you'll make a lot more money. I don't know many of them that could. I mean, they couldn't get it up and going. And it's due to lack of entitlements. And another thing I'm sure we'll talk about is a labor shortage that is going on right now, which is just amazing to think of that we have a labor shortage, but we do.
Well, that kind of makes sense because of the lack of construction. You really had to either, if you're going to be in construction, you migrated to a place that's having it, or you migrated to another industry called oil, probably, while it was paying well.
Right. And our clients haven't seen the oil people come back yet. Apparently, there haven't been as many layoffs in the field as you would have think. Some of that is going to lag. But the bigger issue we found was that there are 570,000 fewer Mexican-born construction workers in the U.S. today than there were at the peak. A good chunk of them, I believe, went back to Mexico. And believe it or not, Donald Trump, if you think otherwise, and I'm not being political here, the facts do show that it's much harder to get across the border than it was 10 years ago. And I just don't think a lot of them are coming back.
Interesting. Okay. Speaking of Hispanic population that's here in California, in say San Bernardino County, and I was just a moderator of a panel with the top person on Riverside in San Bernardino County and the top chancellor of UCR and stuff. And one of the things that came up is the Hispanic population has doubled more than doubled in the county of San Bernardino in the last 15 years. And so, you know, that brings along with it some unique opportunities, but also some unique challenges too. So,
yeah.
Only got about a minute left. The millennial generation, are they interested in number one, forming households, i.e., getting married, and at some point owning real estate?
all the surveys, they say they do. I believe they're going to do it a lot later than their parents did, and I believe a lower percentage of them are going to make it to home ownership than their parents do.
Really? Okay. And that's just because, is there some damage to the psyche of, I just saw that people get really damaged owning that stuff. I don't think I'm going to do it. Or is it because they just want to be free to go wherever the next thing is?
I think both of those things. I also, speaking of great charts, Bruce, chart the GDP growth by decade going back to the 1930s. And you will see that the GDP growth since 2000 has been more similar to the 1930s than any decade since.
Uh-oh.
And it really shows that they've had very little economic opportunity during their 20s.
Interesting.
And that's preventing them from getting ahead, and they're more likely to have gone to college, which is the right long-term decision. But, heck, I've got $300 a month in student debt. It makes it awful hard to save for a down payment when I'm doing that. And then I do believe there's been a cultural shift more towards experiences rather than things, and the importance of actually owning your house is less important than it was to their parents.
John, we've run out of time. Always appreciate getting a chance to talk with you, and hopefully we'll get together soon.
You bet.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, iMortgage, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, IRA Services Trust Company, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South RIA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, New Western Acquisition, North California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Pilot Limousine, Orange County Phoebe, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southern California Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, Tri-Counties Association of Realtors, UDirect IRA Services, Wilson Investment Properties, and Westin South Coast Plaza. To find out more about the event, visit isurvivedrealestate.com. You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.